It is nearly 12 o'clock and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT on 100.1 FM. It is your public radio station here in beautiful downtown Kodiak, Alaska, where we have overcast skies, southeast winds at 10 miles per hour at the airport, where they have 89% humidity, and they are back up to 10 miles of visibility. Rain is expected to slack off and become just mostly cloudy skies for the rest of the afternoon with a high near 53, south winds to 15, gusting to 25. But look for that rain to come back about 7 p.m. and rain until about 10 p.m. Mostly cloudy otherwise overnight tonight with a low of 44, south winds 15, gusting to 25. Coming up on the Midday Report, it's that time of year. Alaska Federation of Natives Convention is getting set to start over in Anchorage. And it's that time of year. They're tracking avian flu in Alaska. We'll get a report. And bear bones on the Aleutian Islands, where bears don't live. Those stories and more after these national headlines.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Lakshmi Singh. The Biden administration is waiving federal laws to build new sections of a border wall in South Texas. This comes despite Biden's 2020 campaign pledge to not build another foot of the wall during his presidency. Here's NPR's Asma Khalid.
This new construction uses money that was appropriated by Congress in 2019 for the wall. The president says he has no choice but to comply with the law as Congress wrote it.
I tried to get them to reappropriate it, to redirect that money. They didn't. They wouldn't. And in the meantime, there's nothing under the law other than they have to use money for what it was appropriated. I can't stop that.
Biden was also asked if he believes the border wall works and said simply no. But in announcing this plan, his Secretary of Homeland Security wrote that there is presently an acute and immediate need to construct physical barriers at the border to prevent unlawful entries into the U.S. Asma Khalid, NPR News, the White House.
The president is working to keep U.S. aid flowing to Ukraine, where officials say Russia carried out another strike today, this time in Kharkiv, where as many as 50 civilians died. President Biden's expressed worry that the shakeup in GOP leadership in the U.S. House, which is holding up legislative work, will jeopardize future funding. Democratic Senator Tim Kaine of Virginia says he expects the president will soon lay out a compelling argument.
I think President Biden has announced he's going to give a major speech about Ukraine. I think he needs to lay out, here's the stakes and here's the additional investment we need to make over not the next month or two, but that we probably need to make over the next 6 months to a year. And if he lays that out and puts a price tag to it, then I think what we'll do is in the Senate, we will begin to advance that funding.
Senator Tim Kaine speaking with NPR's Here and Now. A federal court has selected a new congressional redistricting map for the state of Alabama to use next year's elections. NPR's Hansi Lo Wong reports the map is part of a long-running voting rights lawsuit that could help determine which party controls the next Congress.
Alabama's new congressional map includes two districts where black Alabamians have a realistic chance of electing their preferred candidate. That was a key requirement of three federal judges who found the maps approved by the state's Republican-controlled legislature likely violated the Voting Rights Act by including only one such district. Because of how racially polarized voting is in Alabama, the two new districts are likely to elect Democrats, and that could lead to Republicans losing their slim majority in the U.S. House. Similar redistricting lawsuits are playing out in Louisiana and Georgia, where Republicans are trying to argue that a key section of the Voting Rights Act is no longer constitutional. Hansi Lo Wong, NPR News.
U.S. stocks end the day slightly lower. The Dow is down 9 points to 33,119. You're listening to NPR News.
NPR News is brought to you in part by Providence Kodiak Island Counseling Center. For an appointment or more information, 481-2400.
For KMXT, I'm Terry Haynes. When Anchorage hotels fill up at the start of October, traffic picks up, and stores and restaurants begin to do a brisk business, it's a sign that the Alaska Federation of Natives Convention is around the corner. Native corporations and tribal organizations, as well as state and federal agencies, have already begun to meet ahead of AFN. Many of these gatherings are spread out over the entire month of October. Delegates and their families also arrive early for the Elders and Youth Conference, but AFN officially gets underway on the evening of Wednesday, October 18th. Normally, the convention opens on a Thursday morning, but Nicole Stoops, an organizer for this year's event, says AFN has set aside Wednesday to honor veterans with an exhibit featuring the work of Bill Hess, who has photographed Alaska Native veterans for more than 40 years.
There's many in black and white. There are many in color, but they're all very emotional when you look at them. And it's just a beautiful story to behold.
Also that evening, AFN will premiere One with the Whale, a documentary that tells the story of a St. Lawrence Island teenager, the youngest person in his village to land a whale, an accomplishment that was overshadowed by a wave of criticism from environmental activists. Stoops says some even made death threats.
And to have that type of backlash, really, it shows his emotional turmoil and how his family suffered through that, but also persevered through it.
Stoops says the film will set the tone for the convention and its theme, Our Ways of Life, which will explore how values are shaped by a culture's relationship with the land.
We have diverse cultures, diverse languages, but the core values are still there. Our ways of life are still very similar in how we can work together, especially when it comes to those obstacles that we face as Alaska Natives.
Each region of the state will be highlighted, followed by panel discussions, in part to heal some of the rifts that occurred last year when a bitter debate broke out at the last day of the convention over the Western Alaska salmon crisis. Each year, the state of Alaska tracks avian flu cases in its wild and domestic bird populations. So far in 2023, numbers are looking comparatively good, with less than half of last year's case rate and no outbreaks in domestic animals like chickens. But last month, biologists testing for the virus in Dillingham reported about 20 infected common MERS, the second highest number of cases in the state after the Eastern Aleutians. KDLG's Christina McDermott sat down with state veterinarian Bob Gerlach to learn more about the virus, its risk to the region, and how to stay safe when hunting wild birds.
Thank you, Bob, for joining today. Starting off, what is avian flu?
Avian influenza is a flu virus that basically can be spread from a number of different species of animals, not just birds, but birds are the primary carrier for the virus.
Okay, and can people contract the virus?
There have been some mutations in the virus that it can be transferred and people can be susceptible to it. It's not a high risk. And for this particular virus that's circulating now, the H5N1, there have been just about a handful of people that have been exposed and shown to come down with the infection.
So I've read that there's recently been about 20, last time I looked, cases in Dillingham in the common MER population?
Yeah, that's correct. I mean, it was right around the end of August when samples were collected, and then it does take a while for them to ship them into the laboratory here. And we've got a very good collaboration with the wildlife biologists out there, with both Fish and Game as well as U.S. Fish and Wildlife. And the U.S. Fish and Wildlife biologist noted some MERS that were part of a mortality event, collected the samples and then shipped them into us for avian influenza testing. And as part of our program, surveillance program here, we do necropsies on those animals as well.
So you said there was a mortality event. Does that mean several deaths?
Yeah, that means there's a significant number, it's got to be more than five. And in this case, there were within 10, 20, 30 birds that they had found. And you have to realize that with the large area that the biologists are working in and their ability to get around, oftentimes we may not be seeing the entire mortality event. So it's really important that we have collaboration with the biologists as well as with the general public. If they see something that's abnormal, to report it so we can get somebody out there to go ahead and collect samples to see if influenza may be a problem. We're still looking or waiting for results from the USDA laboratory down in Ames, Iowa, that's doing genetic testing on the virus. And so what they do is not just identify that it's a avian flu virus and that it's H5N1, but they also try to do genomic testing on there to see if they can identify if this is a strain that's been circulating in North America, or the possibility this may be a new introduction from Asia with, you know, the migratory birds that come across. And this is important for us to try to understand to see if we're going to see new strains coming in. Mm-hmm. But what we do know is that the virus is still present in wild birds, and that's kind of what we expected. As we went through last year, when folks were especially concerned, was are birds, wild birds, safe to harvest? And the answer is yes, they're safe to harvest as long as you follow the standard protocols with respect to, you don't want to harvest the sick or dead birds. If you harvest a bird and you start to clean it and find out that there is some abnormalities in there that don't look right, then to report that. And there's a recommendation not to eat birds or any animal that looks abnormal as Hunter is processing it.
Thank you so much. This has been very, very helpful.
Gerlach says the state also recommends following state guidelines for handling and cooking wild birds. He says the easiest way to report a sick or dead bird, wild or domestic, is to call the U.S. Fish and Wildlife's office, their sick and dead bird hotline, at 1-866-527-3358. Researchers are working with the Noongar knowledge holders to understand how bear bones ended up on two Aleutian Islands where bears have never been known to live. KUCV's Sophia Stewart Rossi reports.
In the early 2000s, archaeologists found brown and polar bear bones at two dig sites on Unalaska and Imaknak Islands in the Aleutians. Since then, they've been puzzled as to how the bones got there, since there are no bears on either island today and no historical records of bears ever living there. Lily Parker and Kaylee Tatum are researchers from the University of Oklahoma. They spent 2 weeks in Unalaska this summer sharing their findings with the community and asking for any passed down information about bears on the islands. Tatum says that Noongar knowledge can fill in the gaps left by scientific data.
Anything is helpful, whether mm-hmm. it's, you know, a story that you heard around the campfire as a kid and you barely remember it, I still care. Like, I still want to hear that.
The bear bones are thousands of years old, according to carbon dating. The polar bear bones go back about 5,500 years, and the brown bear bones are roughly 5,500 to 3,000 years old. Parker says they were found in two different midden sites, which are historical dump sites that were used by Noongar people thousands of years ago.
They were just kind of in a jumble, in a mix of other remains, with around 23,000 animal bones found at the site.
Parker and Tatum spoke with many elders about the mystery of the bear bones during their two-week stay in Unalaska. While the elders were largely unsure of how the bones got there, there was one story that may provide a potential answer. Parker says that the information passed down is that thousands of years ago, people may have transported bear meat by sea from the neighboring island of Unimak, which has a population of bears. They say locals may have eaten bear when other food was scarce, like during a particularly long and cold winter. Parker and Tatum plan to visit Unalaska again next summer to present follow-up scientific data. They'll look for genetic clues, including a link between the bear bones found on Unalaska and Imaknak Islands and the bears on Unimak. If they find a connection, it could solve the mystery of how the bear bones ended up on the islands where bears haven't been known to live before. In Unalaska, I'm Sophia Stewart Rossi.
Scammers are targeting Juneau homeowners as they deal with property damage from August's record glacial outburst flood. At least one person in the Marion Drive neighborhood along the Mendenhall River lost more than $50,000 after paying fraudulent bills sent by someone posing as a local contractor. KTOO's Anna Canny has more.
Marion Drive resident Dave McKenna didn't fall for the scam, but he said it was convincing at first. McKenna hired a local contractor to rebuild eroded land and armor the riverbank on his property. He received a fake bill for the work, stamped with the contractor's logo and address.
Just enough detail for things to be really plausible, so none of it was really raising super red flags.
The timing and the amount of money requested closely matched the real work being done on his property. But what ultimately tipped McKenna off was the language of the email. McKenna is a personal friend of the local contractor, and he said the message just didn't sound right.
He's always been kind of a man of few words, and when we finally got a request for payment from the imposter, we realized that, you know, that's a really wordy message.
McKenna called the contractor, who said he hadn't sent out any invoices yet. After that, McKenna alerted his neighborhood. According to the Federal Emergency Management Agency, these kinds of scams are more common after disasters, as bad actors impersonate contractors, building inspectors, or state and federal agents offering aid. And that's been true after the flood. The Juneau Police Department confirmed to KTOO that it's received several reports of fake invoices that were sent to homeowners dealing with the flood. At least one resident on Marion Drive lost more than $50,000 to the scammers. That person did not want their name published and did not want to be quoted, but they shared emails and receipts with KTOO that show they made three separate payments via wire transfer, one to an out-of-state bank and two to a local Wells Fargo account under the name J&J Ventures. Lieutenant Craig Campbell with the Juneau Police Department confirmed that there is at least one open investigation into flood repair scams. He said that impersonation and phishing scams generally have one thing in common.
People want you to make quick decisions, so they have like a sense of urgency on it.
And according to the Federal Trade Commission, payment requests via wire transfer can also be a giveaway for scam activity. Lieutenant Campbell declined to share details on the local investigation, but he said people who suspect scam activity should call the Juneau Police Department. In Juneau, I'm Anna Canny.
Federal mine safety regulators have cited the owners of the Red Dog Mine for 13 violations that agency inspectors found at the mine in August. But agency officials say Tech Alaska has addressed the violations at the zinc mine near Kotzebue. KUAC's Tim Ellis has this report.
Red Dog is one of the biggest zinc and lead mines in the world, and it has a history of violating federal health and environmental laws and regulations. But the 13 violations inspectors found at the mine in August involve safety hazards for miners. A spokesperson for the Canada-based Tech Alaska declined to talk about the violations on tape, but said in an email Tuesday that, quote, "At Red Dog operations, nothing is more important than the health and safety of our people," unquote. A spokesperson for the Federal Department of Labor also declined to talk on tape, but said in an email that Tech Alaska has addressed all 13 of the citations. The spokesperson said the agency hasn't, however, been told by Tech whether it'll contest the violations and penalties. The Tech spokesperson declined to comment on that, but he said, quote, "We addressed these violations immediately and have taken action to prevent any recurrence," unquote. Officials with the Mine Safety and Health Administration, or MSHA, inspected Red Dog and 13 other mines around the country in August as part of its routine monthly inspections. The Labor Department spokesperson said MSHA had proposed penalties for all 13 violations, eight of which were categorized as significant and substantial. MSHA said seven of those violations could have caused miners to slip, trip, or fall, and one was for failure to provide safe access to a work area. MSHA also ordered the company to correct a trip and fall violation in one work area where rock and mud had accumulated. With help from KOTZ's Desiree Hagen in Kotzebue, I'm Tim Ellis in Delta Junction.
Radio control vehicle hobbyists have been gaining traction on the Kenai Peninsula thanks to Facebook and a local business owner. KDLL's Hunter Morrison has more on the local scene.
If you're wandering through a neighborhood in Kenai, you might see a group of people outside racing radio control vehicles on a makeshift track. This is just an ordinary day in the life of Stephen Gotso, who recently built an RC racing course in his side yard. He says that his love for radio control vehicles began as a child.
When I was a kid, if you ever asked me what you wanted to be when you grew up, I wanted to be a race car driver. And I feel like that I'm kind of getting there now. I feel like I am almost a race car driver now with these RC cars. So maybe it's just I'm fulfilling a childhood passion of mine in a small way.
Gotso, owner and operator of Alaska Car Shop on Kay Beach, says that the RC vehicle community on the peninsula has seen growth since his shop began selling radio control vehicles last year. At the time, there were no community RC vehicle tracks available for use. With approval from his next-door neighbors, Godso took it upon himself to change that last winter. Using the snow to his advantage, Godso forms winter tracks throughout the season. The winter months also see larger RC vehicle meetups, which are advertised on the local RC community's Facebook page. While not all of them are held at his house, Godso says that some of these winter meetups have seen over 30 people.
You can have a lot of fun with these things in the wintertime from the warmth of your own car in a parking lot, at least until you tip it on its roof and then you get a brisk walk on your hands. But it's kind of interesting how that can actually work out and give you some outdoor fun in the wintertime without getting cold.
There are two ways to RC, racing and crawling. While racing is what most people think of when it comes to remote control fun, crawling involves more hefty vehicles that maneuver obstacles like rocks or hills. Many RC car enthusiasts take their crawlers on hikes and are behind some of the largest meetups locally. Godso tells a story about a meetup last spring where a friend became stuck on a slushy snowbank.
Nobody wanted to go crawling up that mountain to go get this thing. So I took the Bash and Bronco and I just sent it right up that hill and managed to actually like get it. He was on his roof. I managed to get it and my wheels hopped up at just the right time to lock right on top of him. Literally, it was like, I got you, bro. And we just tumbled down the mountain together and brought it right down to our feet.
Godso and his two friends are preparing RC vehicles for an evening of racing on his track.
So yeah, I got these four vehicles here, three bandits. I'm planning on mostly having just the bandits, but basically I've got a fleet of vehicles, of racers. When I put out an invite out there for anybody to come out and say, hey, I got my house tracks open, come out and play, I have a vehicle for you to play with.
Great, that's what you get. That's what you get. You see what happens when you start playing dirty?
Even I got in on the fun.
The ultimate question is, can I try?
Oh my goodness, how do we make it this far without it?
Yeah,
here you go. Yeah. Blue one's you.
Blue one's me. All right, let me give this a try.
While the group hosts meetups for RC racers and crawlers, spectators are always welcome. The group hopes to grow the RC community on the peninsula.
When you're watching cars go as fast as they possibly can in a very small space and then have to brake really fast, crashes are fun. Everybody loves carnage, especially when it's just vehicles related and there's nobody in those vehicles. It's fun. It's a fun time.
To find out more about RC racing meetups on the peninsula, visit the RC Car Shop's Facebook group. Godso also documents his RC exploits on YouTube, where you could find him at Stephen Godso. In Kenai, I'm Hunter Morrison.
Stocks open lower. I'm Nancy Marshall-Genzer with the Marketplace Minute. Investors are watching to see if there'll be a government shutdown. If there is, some of the data the Federal Reserve relies on wouldn't be issued, like the September jobs report. The ratings agency Moody's has warned that a shutdown could damage the federal government's credit rating. The U.S. economy is still going fairly strong. In its latest estimate, the Bureau of Economic Analysis says economic growth increased at an annual rate of 2.1% in the second quarter. First quarter growth was revised higher to 2.2%. First-time claims for unemployment benefits were up a bit less than expected over the latest week, with 204,000 people filing claims. Employers have been holding on to their workers because the labor market is still tight. I'm Nancy Marshall-Genzer with the Marketplace Minute.
Marketplace Minute is supported by Vermont Tourism. Trip ideas and planning tools available at vermontvacation.com.
To celebrate National Walk Your Dog Week, the Humane Society of Kodiak and the Kodiak Animal Shelter are hosting a dog walk and pet costume contest on Saturday, October 7th. The walk begins at the Kodiak College at 10 a.m., and there are two routes to choose from, a 1-mile walk or a 2-mile walk. There will be refreshments, door prizes, and a photo booth for dogs and owners. Registration is available at kodiakanimalshelter.org or in person the day of the walk.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon and welcome to your Island Messenger for Thursday. It is the fifth day of October, the year 2023. The sun rose today at 8:22. It will set again at 7:32, which will give us 11 hours and 10 minutes of daylight, a loss of 4 minutes and 55 seconds compared to yesterday. Our record high for this date was 74 degrees, set in 1929, and our record low was 29 degrees, set in 1970, and then again in chilly 2021. Currently 50 degrees under overcast skies. Out at the airport, they now have southeast winds at 10 miles per hour, and they have 10 miles of visibility. And they're saying rain is still likely until 2 p.m. or so this afternoon, followed by cloudy skies and a high near 53, south winds to 15, gusting to 25. Rain is likely tonight between 8 p.m. and 11 p.m., mostly cloudy skies otherwise tonight, with a low of 44, south winds 15, gusting to 25. And a 40% chance of rain tomorrow with mostly cloudy skies tomorrow too, and a high near 53 with south winds to 15, gusting to 20. We just had a low tide here on the east side at 12:12. That was a 3.8-foot tide. Our next high tide will be at 6:29 p.m. and be 8.2 feet. That will be followed by a low tide at 1:43 a.m. of 1.3 feet. Over on the west side, your low tide will happen at 12:42 this afternoon, just a few minutes from now, a 5.6-foot tide, followed by a high tide at 6:50 p.m. of 12.2 feet, and a low tide in the middle of the night at 2:03 a.m. That will be a 2-foot tide in Larsen Bay. Mariners, here is your forecast for Marmot Island to Sitkanak out to 15 nautical miles. Small craft advisory through tomorrow. Southeast winds to 25 knots today, south 30 tonight, 12-foot seas building to 13 feet tonight, and south 25 tomorrow, diminishing to 15 knots in the afternoon with 11-foot seas. For Friday night, look for southeast 15 and seas to 8 feet. Over in the Shelikov Strait, gale warning for today, northeast 45, becoming southeast 25, 16-foot seas are expected to subside to 7 feet this afternoon. For tonight, southeast 30 and seas to 5 feet. And for tomorrow in the Shelikov, south 25, seas to 5 feet. Going to east 15 on Friday night with 3-foot seas. They are calling for northwest 35 on Monday.
Registration for the 17th annual Run the Rock race is now open. Join us on Saturday, October 14th for a 5K, 10K, half marathon, or marathon race. Registration includes a t-shirt and post-race barbecue. Plus, you'll be supporting your local public radio station. Register online at kmxt.org or stop by the station at 620 Egan Way.
Run the Rock. Oh, hang on. Don't forget to register. It'll be here before you know it. Run the Rock. You can do that, as Bradley just said, at kmxt.org. The Kodiak Borough Assembly will be having a regular meeting tonight. That will be happening at 6:30 p.m. in the Borough Assembly Chambers. First Friday Art Walk is happening, and the Kodiak History Museum will be featuring Kodiak artists Mariah Stapleton, Susan Malutin, and David Tucker, who will share things about their respective artistic specialities, including weaving, fur sewing, and illustrating. And that's going on between 5 to 5:30 with a artist Q&A and artist demonstrations from 5:30 to 7 p.m. It's free to the public. Again, the whole thing starts at 5 p.m. tomorrow at the Kodiak History Museum. Meet the artists. Also a part of the First Friday Art Walk, the Kodiak Island National Wildlife Refuge is hosting an artist reception for the new mural made by Hannah Scholl. That's going on from 5 to 7 p.m. on Friday. There will be activities, refreshments, and giveaways. And on Saturday at the Kodiak National Wildlife Refuge downtown, they're having a walk for the wild, and that's 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. at the Near Island North End Trailhead. So meet at the Near Island North End Trailhead Saturday at 10 a.m. It's an interactive nature walk. It's fun for all ages, and there will be prizes. Walk for the Wild on Saturday. The Hospice and Palliative Care of Kodiak is providing a remembrance workshop this coming weekend, October 7th and 8th, Saturday and Sunday, noon to 4 on both days. That will be happening at Rooted over on Mill Bay Road. Participants will create a small book or collage or montage to commemorate a loved one. You do not need to be an artist, and all supplies that you need will be provided. The workshop will be led by Bonnie Dillard. Call Bonnie at 907-512-5535 for more information. The dog walk is coming up. The Humane Society of Kodiak and the Kodiak Animal Shelter are sponsoring the annual dog walk for community members and their dogs. In addition to a choice of a shorter or longer walk, there's a pet costume contest and door prizes. There will also be a photo booth, always fun with your dogs, and refreshments. Registration can be done early, and more information is available by visiting the Animal Shelter's website, which is at kodiakanimalshelter.org. You can also call Linda Lance at 907-654-5717 about the dog walk. Things happening at the library? Well, it's Banned Books Week, chance to learn about what books are most challenged and why in a display at the library. Come check it out and check some out. Celebrate the freedom to read. And remember, Murder Mystery Dinner Party is the theme of this month's escape room. Sign up for a time to try and solve the puzzle of whodunit, appropriate for ages 13 and older. Time slots are Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays at 3 p.m., Tuesdays 3 p.m. and 5:30 p.m., and Saturdays at 11 a.m. Contact the library to sign up for your spot. Canna's Elder Story Time is tomorrow morning at 11 a.m., and the children's movie Monsters vs. Aliens will be shown tomorrow at 3:30 p.m. On Halloween, innocent-looking carved pumpkins reveal themselves to be mutant aliens instead. It's rated PG. Again, that's tomorrow at 3:30 p.m. at the library. Storytime with a twist, steam in a story. Ms. Kate will read the book Maybe Something Beautiful, then follow up with the painting activity. That's happening Saturday at 11 a.m. It's for kids in kindergarten through 8th grade. So a lot of fun. That's Saturday at 11 a.m.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT three times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m., during the Midday Report at 12:20, and in the evening at 7 o'clock. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.